Welcome to Church Ahead, the weekly Christian podcast talking about big questions facing the future of church with Rev L, all the way from the north of England. Episode 94, Lay Don't. Try this tongue twister that I picked up on the Wirral Peninsula between Cheshire and Liverpool, but verbally part of Merseyside. Dee-doo-doo-dat-don't-dee. Dee-doo-do-don't-dee-do. I used to have hours of fun winding them up with that one. I even built sermon structures around it. But for today, what does the verb do refer to? Lay ministry, of course. We said last week that lay people do nearly everything in church. So this week, what don't they do? Short answer is not much. Let's try a slightly more vicarish, official church answer. They don't preach, unless they're licensed. What are you talking about? It's the same with clergy, so that statement is meaningless unless we say clergy don't preach. All right then, one last try. They don't preside at Holy Communion. Okay, I think we've finally got it. Certainly as far as the mainstream denominations are concerned. Okay, the Brethren revel in having no hired hands anywhere near the breaking of bread. But for most churches, this is the real boundary between lay and ordained ministry. Very Protestant churches that play down communion and play up the centrality of preaching see this as an ungodly demotion of preaching the word. But I think there are good reasons for this. You need quite a bit of training and practice to grasp just how many ways it's perfectly possible to make a dog's dinner out of the Lord's Supper. Here come three pertinent things that I think lay people don't do. Number one, lay people don't live forever. Number two, lay people don't volunteer in the same numbers. Number three, lay people don't like being taken for granted. The Church Times has done an excellent piece of investigative journalism looking at this issue recently, and I rely quite heavily on their March 2024 article entitled No Church Warden, Vacant PCC Place and a Volunteering Crisis. I can't help wondering if that word crisis is overused these days. Is this really a volunteering crisis? Let's have a look. So, the first issue is that these pesky people let the church down by failing to live forever. Sheffield Diocese of the Church of England has quite helpfully identified what it calls the four-headed beast wounding the vitality of its churches. The four beasts are attendance down, income down, three, the burden of building maintenance, and fourthly, an ageing, elderly army of volunteers trying to hold on and keep things going. How dare they retire as young as 90? And some of these lightweight commitment phobes even have the audacity to die in post. Reflecting on the way the third and fourth heads of the beast interact, they say, support for church buildings relies heavily on the goodwill and energy of a dwindling number of increasingly elderly volunteers who within 10 years will no longer be able to sustain their efforts. So what would you say to these people? Pull yourself together and live to 110. I've just spent a couple of weeks helping an English-speaking church in a swanky Swiss ski resort over Easter again. As a northern Englishman, this is where I get to mix with church people on holiday from the Church of England's southern English heartlands. Nice, well-mannered people from village churches across the shires, where the church goes back further and has always been stronger than in my part of the world. As usual, I met some lovely people. There was a sadness because we were mourning the loss of Philip, who was very active in the life of Portsmouth Cathedral, a capable property man who gave a great deal to church and was a great supporter of this English-speaking church. Philip has died this year in his late 80s. We miss Philip, but this year I was very taken by meeting Michael, a little younger, who is a surveyor by profession. He is a church warden in Hampshire, and on the board of several charities. Rock solid supporter of church. Even when he's in his Swiss holiday home, he's online contributing to the running of his village church. People like Michael are one of the Church of England's greatest assets. But as I got to know him and listen to his experience of warden life, what I really wanted to know is how old is he? I managed to get the number out of his daughter. He is 84 years old. It really is not unusual for the key lay people in many churches to be in their 80s. And joking apart, I really feel for these people. Imagine being well into your 80s. And let's say you're a more ordinary, humble soul than Philip or Michael, who are exceptionally strong, capable men. Let's imagine your parents are buried in the churchyard. Your daughter was wed here. Your grandchildren were baptised in that font. And you're worried sick that if you can't keep the rot and damp at bay, the diocese will shut the church building. Or if you can't pay the diocesan tax in full, our shared part-time priest will go. I get the sense that many of these people care massively about their church. They know they shouldn't really be doing these roles at their age. Or if they don't, I can tell you their middle-aged non-church children do, with many a tense family conference. Church is exploiting my mum. But perhaps there is a hope that if I keep on going for just one more term of office, then someone younger will turn up. Senior clergy close churches without much personal loss. I don't say they do it lightly, but they don't have much personal investment at stake. Local lay leaders see it as much more existential. And so the church warden, approaching 90, dying on the job. The second problem is lay people don't volunteer in the same numbers anymore. So Truro Diocese has 87 parishes with only one warden. There are supposed to be two. And there are 12 parishes with no warden at all. York Diocese says half of all parishes are unable to find separate individual volunteers for the positions of warden, secretary and treasurer. So some poor devil is probably doing all three of those jobs in many places. In Barbara Pym's novel, set in the 1950s, the problem English churches had then was the opposite. Too many, often women, all wanting to do the flowers and fighting over their turf. Excuse me, but that pew is mine to clean. PCC elections were, of course, local high drama because there were always more candidates than places. Great material for a novelist. The overconfident sergeant major barking at the vicar versus the really reluctant person who feels painfully embarrassed to hear their own voice in public. The Church of England is engineered as a volunteer-rich, people-intensive infrastructure. You just can't operate without lots and lots of willing volunteers. In many ways, this has been the church's great strength, building active lay ministry into the very structure of things. But the daughters of Barbara Pym's flower arrangers are not queuing up to replace their mothers. The men who would cut the lawns and trim the trees and are paid to do this work, supervised by our octogenarian wardens, if there is a warden. Far from fighting over these posts, people need to be coaxed into them. Yes, one more job for our overworked clergy or the non-existent warden. The Church Times rightly calls this a volunteering crisis. Let's compare lay volunteer recruitment with clergy recruitment. There are still plenty of people coming through the pipeline of ordination and training for ordained ministry. Now, you know, I think the quality of clergy is going down. But these doubts about the quality of those recruits would be a nice-to-have luxury when it comes to lay volunteering. Increasingly, the quality of lay volunteers is irrelevant because there aren't any. It's not that the Philips and Michaels of this world are giving way to lesser men and women. Increasingly, they are the last person to hold the job and the role dies with them. The third problem about lay volunteers is they don't like being taken for granted. Whilst musing this Church Times article, my eyes were pricked by a Daily Telegraph article with the title, Church of England Treats Volunteers Abominably. Emma Thompson is a disillusioned former church warden who found the role really demoralising, especially between vicars, when they are virtually running the whole show. Just too much to do and not enough help. She felt very isolated and unsupported in the role. She complains that neither the archdeacon nor the bishop ever came round. In despair, she says, they can clear the weeds. They can go into the schools and put Christingle oranges together, transport elderly members of the congregation, and answer dozens of emails from bridezillas. No, I'd never heard of them either. Apparently this is what church wardens call the very demanding brides who obsess about their wedding arrangements. Now, I need to tell you that Emma does have an agenda here. She is part of a movement called Save the Parish, which believes that the Church of England is too top-heavy and that struggling parishes are overly taxed by excessively staffed diocesan bureaucracy. We'll look into this spat on another day. For today, sufficient to say that the church warden's workload is growing, so they feel worn down without any increase in appreciation. To be honest, the clergy say the same, and I wouldn't be surprised if diocesan staff say the same thing too. I can't imagine the bishop's life is much fun these days either. I sense that every group of stakeholders in church life feels more is asked of them and less help is given. But in a volunteer-intensive community, the volunteers feeling hacked off really is a problem. I'm not interested in bashing bishops or the diocesan officials or joining in the mudslinging. I think what we can say is that the Church of England is like an oil tanker that turns very slowly. It's not adapting to the volunteer drought quickly enough, and it's operating a model that just does not work in an age of reluctant volunteers. Some of their initiatives to alleviate the problem actually aggravate it further. For instance, there's a move towards replacing parochial church councils with joint church councils in large multi-church benefices, which in theory means fewer meetings and less paperwork. But trying to do all the business for several churches all in one go, in one evening, seems to wear people out with no time to talk about anything other than buildings and money. And I've got no better solution to offer you. At root, I don't think this problem is primarily organisational. I think it is spiritual. I think it's about how much people value church and how they feel about being seen as its representative. Will they nail their colours to the mast? Do they want to work in God's vineyard or let the vines turn into weeds? Something is going on in people's hearts, and church is increasingly out of favour. Even those who go to church are hesitant about their commitment. One of the many awful jobs of bishops these days is trying to relativise bad news stories like this one. All right, we've got some problems, but no worse than society in general. People are busier and volunteering is down in all sorts of organisations. I'm just not convinced by this because I don't see food banks or park runs or the National Trust struggling for volunteers. When a voluntary organisation can't attract volunteers, that's saying something pretty basic, fundamental and important. There are several dials flashing red on the dashboard of church life. The volunteer crisis is one of the most alarming. So, the Wirral was wrong when it comes to lay ministry. It's not, did you do that, don't he? Not with lay ministry. No, with lay ministry, it's, they don't do that, do they? They don't do, do they do? Thank you for listening to episode 94. Next week, what should lay people do?